Hey everybody, I'm Dr. Deb, and welcome to another episode of PTSD and Beyond.
Hey everybody, it's Dr. Deb with PTSD and Beyond, and we have a fantastic episode for you guys today. I want to say real quickly a shout out to everybody who is experiencing anxiety and struggling right now with the unrest in the world and the injustices. And thank you again for being here. We hope that our community continues to provide a safe space for everyone and a space that we know is a foundation of community and kindness and love, where we fight for equality, that everyone is equal, and that we are all humans. And tonight's guest, I say tonight because it seems like the days are just blending in with one another. And today's guest is somebody who I know you guys are really going to resonate well with. This is a person that I happened to meet a few years back, more of a cold call kind of situation. And the irony is when we met, it's like we've known each other for years. And why this person is super special is they understand and emulate what it is to be a soul and live in the moment and be in the present and embody that love and kindness and know that love is the antidote to pain and suffering. This person is a former athletic trainer for over 25 years with two professional organizations, and is a graduate of Mindful Leadership, the Mindful Leadership Program at Atlantic University. And so let's give Mark Grusbeck a PTSD and Beyond warm welcome. Hey, Mark, how's it going?
I'm great. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. I'm speechless.
You're speechless. It's all true.
Oh, it's just very kind, and I appreciate that. I'm very grateful to be here.
It's all true. You know, one thing that I think that listeners are going to find with our discussion is that I feel like we're like brother and sister. We go back and forth. You know, you kibitz a little bit, and then I kibitz a little bit, and we go back and forth, and then you'll say something, and then I think, wow, that's really deep, you know, and then I got to think about it, and then I'll respond, and then, you know, you think about it, and then you respond, and we just go back and forth with these wonderful conversations. And folks, I want you to know that Mark is just, he is just so wise. If I was to say of the handful of people that I'm like, you know what? Yeah. Okay. So who would I go to for deep reflection and really a contemplative, not a practice, but a contemplative, you know, integration of being. Mark is one of those people. And, why don't we start with some of your story? You know, how did you get into, first of all, you know, mindful leadership? And, you know, it's a path that people go down, but there's a reason why we go on that path. So talk with folks a little bit so they can get to know you and know your journey and how you got to mindful leadership.
Yeah, I think, first of all, doing here is really incredible, not just with the podcast, but allowing to come on and take a moment to do a little storytelling. I find that, you know, that's powerful in my own growth and learning, just hearing everybody's experiences. And so I appreciate that. You know, growing up, I was drawn to athletic training and the idea of some sort of medical background. It's kind of what I found myself passionate about at a young age, and not being a good enough athlete to compete, you know, on the field, but, as a way to kind of stay close to those things. And then baseball was always, you know, a love of mine. It still is. It calms me. It sort of soothes me in ways that other, you know, sports don't. So, I was lucky enough to live that life for a while, but, You know, what I found out at, you know, sort of 25 years in, or at least 20 years in, that you know, it was a fast paced life, and I worked really hard at it. And I found out that, you know, I wasn't sure that I was living my best life or my happiest life. And so I started looking for ways to maybe be better for myself and you know, for my wife, and be healthier. And, you know, I was lucky enough to meet some people along the way that kind of nudged me in the right direction. You know, mindful leadership is a great thing. I think it's something that will emerge more as we maybe hopefully come out of this pandemic and all the chaos and uncertainty we're dealing with now. But it's sort of like a little, somewhat of a buzzword in the organizational business sense. Nobody knows really what it means. And, you know, as you and I've connected and you know, I've tried to be a little bit more involved in some of the things that you're doing with the PTSD and beyond community, what I've found is that it, you know, the essence of leadership in its truest form, and mindful leadership to be sure, is that it's just anchored in humanness and kindness and compassion and love, which are all the simple things that we sort of intuitively know as kids and young people, but we're sort of steered away from throughout our lives. And that's certainly been my experience. I mean, I've had some great highs and some great experiences throughout my career, but I found that it also steered me away from who I am at my core. And spiritually, like I lost all spiritual, you know, presence in my life, and who I want to be as my best self. And so, you know, I had to sort of step away from that and go in a different direction. And the experience at Atlantic was very transformative and great for me. So I'm happy. I don't know exactly where I'm headed next, but, you know, I'm excited and grateful for the things that have happened and where I'm at.
So, you know, you mentioned a few things here that really resonates, I think, with people that are listening. I'm also glad that you are where you're at. Everyone's at where they're supposed to be, which is really interesting, because sometimes we have like this resistance of, and I know you and I have talked so many times about this, there's so much tension and resistance of where we're at, that sometimes we miss the obvious of why we are where we're at. And my next question is that I want to ask you is, you talked about, you know, steering away from, you know, and is steering away from where we get off our path, or we become so distracted by, I want to say, the adulthood, right? The adulting of life, that we miss out on the soulness of life. And how can people, I don't want to use the word connect, but how can people become aware of this steering away before they, somebody mentioned this a couple days ago, before they hit, you know, a wall, or other people might resonate with, say, hit rock bottom. So how can people become aware that they're being steered away, or they're steering themselves away? How can they get back before they hit a wall or rock bottom?
That's it's a really good question, and one I'm not sure I have the entire answer for. Part of my, you know, my education at Atlantic, I came to some, you know, I had some breakthroughs for myself that. So I started asking some of those questions, like, why did I have to get to this point before I could see where I needed to go? You know, I had so many blind spots, because for me, it was partly workload and also partly this idea that, you know, I was going to be happy when I made it to a major league team, that, you know, we were able to accomplish winning World Series. I'd be happy when, you know, which I think is taught, you know, through our upbringing, through our parents, our families, our friends, our education system, that, you know, success is defined by the car you drive, what's in your bank account, how many flashy rings you have. And, you know, that's not to be judgmental about those things. That's just how we're raised sometimes. And so, you know, we're always looking for that golden ring at the end, you know, like this pot of gold that's going to be there to justify all of our sacrifice. And at some point along the way, whether you achieve those successes or not, you suffer. And when at some point in your life, whether it's in the middle or the end, when you've suffered so greatly, you pause. And in that pause, some of those things that were hidden, you know, in blind spots and shadows become visible to you, and you change your focus. And I think, you know, mindfulness is a way to do that, because I had tried mindfulness techniques along the way, you know, as it became more popular in this country, and being in a place where peak performance was a big deal, and people talked about it. And so mindfulness came up from time to time, and I tried it. I just didn't do it consistently enough to slow myself down, to get past the thoughts and into my body and the emotions part of it, where I could see things that I wouldn't normally see in my day-to-day life. So, you know, I sort of got burned out and hit rock bottom to some degree, and needed to do something else. And so I think that's mostly how we get there. And I'm not sure that there's another way to do it. I would like to believe that, you know, if we could integrate some sort of mindfulness practice, a more maybe Buddhist approach, where we focus our, you know, we outline success as more of a middle path versus, you know, either have or have not, the extremes.
Right.
That maybe there's a way that people would see better, but I'm not so sure if that's true. I think human beings are just destined to suffer to some degree. You know, suffering is part of life. We all go through it in our unique way, and it's through that suffering that we learn and grow, and we eventually find ourselves. And I don't know that we can change that. I'd like to think we can, because nobody wants to suffer. And, you know, people like you and me, you know, spend much of their day thinking about how we could relieve the suffering of ourselves and others. And, you know, it's a nice thought. I just don't know if it's possible. Mindfulness is helpful in that regard, because it offers space to be honest, to explore emotions, to, you know, not just justify your actions, that, you know, say, oh, I'm just stubborn, I do it this way. Well, that can mean a lot of things. Does that mean trying something new is scary? Maybe. Does that mean that my stubbornness covers up anger? you know, from some place in my life, maybe. Like, it's unique, and it's only answered through introspection. And, you know, it's hard work. So if you're not pushed there through suffering, I'm not sure that you stand in the pain long enough to find those answers for yourself.
That's a really good point. Do we allow ourselves to stand in the pain, right? And allow ourselves to feel it, and then make the decision, enough is enough, right? So when enough becomes enough, and where I want to direct our next thought to is on mindful leadership, specifically in organizations and with leaders, especially right now. I find it interesting that in the United States, mindfulness is this trend, right? It's trendy, and people aren't really understanding what it's about. And yet, if you talk to people, they'll say, oh yeah, you know, I practice mindfulness, or oh yeah, I'm doing this thing with mindfulness. And one of the things that I've seen over the years is this, I want to say this checkbox, but it is something like that. You know, well, we've checked the box on that. Yeah, we have something like that. And what I want to know is, and what your thoughts are on, is what more will it take for organizational leaders to stop thinking and embracing to the point of, morphism, I guess, is what I want to say. You become, you know, like, morphed into something else with analytics, because it's not analytics that gets in the way of doing business. It's emotion. It's the sense of belonging. It's a sense of purpose. And what more will it take for organizational leaders to change their mindset to integrate, you know, mindfulness-based practices in an organization? Whether we're talking baseball, or we're talking in finance or law, I mean, pick the industry. But what more needs to happen for leaders who are influential in setting the tone and remember in school, it's the culture, which is, this is the way that we do things around here. It's our values and morals. What more is it going to need to take? And I say that because there are organizations that are doing this, and people will say, oh yeah, well they, you know, of course they're going to do it. You know, they're in California. Of course they're going to do it. They're on the East Coast. And I think that's just an excuse to say, well, that's, you know, where they're at, as opposed to, I'm making the decision to not doing it, and I just don't want to say why. So what more needs to happen before mindfulness and heart-based leadership, you know, soul-based leadership becomes the normal?
Yeah. I mean, you're so right on, because, you know, my journey was through, you know, professional sports, which everybody thinks is so much different than the real business world. And it's not. It's exactly the same. In so many ways, you know, a game, a sport, which is still a business, and it's a billion-dollar business, to be honest. And so, you know, all of the normal business stuff applies. And so, you know, to answer your question, I think that the same is true for organizations or leaders in organizations as it is for us as individuals, that they have to feel the pain of not doing. And that comes from each of us individually. And I believe that, you know, we all have accountability to do our part, and sort of use our skills and whatever leverage we may have as individuals to demand something better of the places that we work at. Because we spend more of our lives at work than we do at home.
Yeah.
And, you know, when are we going to demand that we work for people who listen, who care for us, that are willing to not just put it in a mission statement, but actually their actions back that up on a consistent basis, and know that, you know, it's not about squeezing the juice out of the lemon. It's how great can we make each of the people that work for us, because they're going to help us become great as a company. And it's a growth mindset. It's a financial commitment to invest in your people. You know, this idea of mindful leadership is great, except for, you know, your question really defines it. It's like, but how do we do it? And, you know, is it a ground up process of building leaders, future leaders, and being patient as those leaders grow throughout the organization to fulfill those positions that, you know, at the top that have leverage? Is it a, you know, top down approach that, you know, you convince the people at the top to do the really hard work? And that's difficult because it requires them to do the same work that we all need to do. And it's difficult and painful, and they've already, you know, reached a point where they're comfortable. So it's hard to convince them to do it. Or do you sort of mix that together in some weird formula to, you know, inside out approach, top down, bottom up, all of it. And every organization's a little bit different. And so it's difficult, but I do think there's windows of opportunity now that organizations that once had, you know, sort of autopilot success and were making millions of dollars and didn't matter if people left or whatever, they were making money hand over fist, are now struggling. And, you know, I think there's windows of opportunity for us to at least have these conversations that, you know, people are working from home. Why do I have to come in? I can stay with my family. I have better work-life balance. I feel healthier. You know, these are windows of opportunity to say, why are we doing this? It's not just because that's the way we do it.
Right.
Like, we need something better. And just open those doors. But to me, it comes down to, you know, because this is stuff that, you know, at least late in my career, I tried to introduce, but it just wasn't really accepted. They weren't ready to hear it yet. And I think it has to be a sort of ground up, inside out approach where it comes from a place of kindness and openness and curiosity and authenticity, where you can build people around you that just want something better. And right. It's hard to convince people at the top that they need to change when they're making money or they're successful. So I think you just have to meet people where they are, and you have to be patient with it, because this movement of, you know, whether you're talking about changing business organizations or, you know, integrating mental health conversations into the mainstream, it's one person at a time. It's one conversation at a time. And that's really hard work. It's hard to build trust with people and get that information. It's hard to stay present and sit with them wherever they are. But it's necessary if we're going to make this kind of change. And it's those ground level people who are going to demand that they're not going to be used anymore. Right. They're not going to be thrown away anymore. They're not going to, you know, not have enough health care for their families, and they'll just leave. And these companies are going to have to go, okay, well, what do we got to do? And, you know, It's not just about, just saying, okay, here's our wellness plan. Here's our EAP program. If you have a problem, call them. It's about sitting in the room and looking each other in the eye and developing connections and trust through authentic connection that people are going to get it. Until we get to that point, which is, I don't know where that pain level is in organizations, but I feel like they have to feel it. That's just my perspective. I could be wrong. But I feel like they need to feel that discomfort enough where they're open to doing something new.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I know the research because I've done the research on, just pick a year. When I say that, the numbers of years of research that I've conducted on the amount of money that organizations have lost, everything from, stress, so data that supports just simply stress, data that supports, a lack of harmony within a person's life, so quality of work as well as quality of life, challenges with, being the sandwich generation, challenges with, having children, challenges with, being, a single person, isolation. There are so many variables that affect a person at work. And what I found is that when people at work, they're thinking about home. And when people are at home, they're thinking about work. And one of the things that you touched on was with COVID, there were so many organizations that said, no remote working, it's never going to work. Even universities, there were people that were saying, nope, we're never going to be online. And COVID really forced people and organizations, guess what? We're going to kind of prove you wrong here. And now there are so many people that are given the option, if you'd like to continue to be a remote worker, you can. Or if you'd like to come into the office, say, once a week and work at home 4 days instead. The landscape of remote working and working itself has really shifted, which is interesting because one of the phrases that really, I don't like this phrase. I never did like this phrase. And I find that this phrase is outdated and it needs to be part of the change because it has a energy with it that supports something that isn't going to move people forward. And in organizations, it is the phrase human resources, as opposed to human asset or partners, employee partners. No, we're human resources. I'm a resource. Yeah. And it's so cold, it says, I don't have any worth really other than a disposable something because it's a resource. A resource is something that you use. A resource is not something that you care about. A resource is not something that you cultivate. A resource isn't something that you invest in. And yet, we call it human resources. Remember, it used to be called personnel, right? That was like a long time ago. I think I only knew one company when I first started working that called their, HR personnel. And then it went to human resources. And, what's going to be next? And not what's going to be next as far as like a buzzword, but a transformation of what are we really trying to say here? So we talked about, the pain point. We talked about, windows of opportunity. And what's really interesting about one of the things that you said is that, people are going to demand, something better. And what's interesting about COVID is it makes me wonder how many people are going to start their own business now. How many people have said, okay, you know what? I've gotten a taste of being at home with my kids and I'm doing homeschooling and they're doing better. My spouse and I are doing better. Or, you know what, I actually really like this. I'm not experiencing the same tension, the same stress, all of these things. And I think I'm going to start doing something else. So organizations, I believe, are going to be forced at some point to make great change, and maybe even looking at themselves and saying, what is our intent? What is our intention? And what is our purpose and our why? Why did we start this company in the first place? And how far off the path did we get? Remember when we were talking earlier about steering away? I think the same thing happens in organizations. And I think also too with COVID, and then also our lack of equality around the world, that people are going to start being very selective. I don't know if you've seen recently, but there are companies that are being posted on social media of donations that they've made, that people are saying, I flat out will never, ever step foot in that company and give my money to those organizations ever again. I actually had that conversation with my kids the other day because I said, we will never go and visit and patron this organization ever again. And my son said, why not? I'm really going to miss. And I said, we can learn how to make it. We'll learn how to make it before we'll go back. And I just said, every time you give that company your money, you know, you're saying how they act and behave is okay. And it's not. So perhaps there's going to be more entrepreneurship.
I do believe there's going to be a push that people are going to realize that, you know, being separate from the office is a healthy thing, is a good thing. And they're more productive, they're more creative, because they're healthier in general. And by health, not just physically, but, you know, mentally healthy, more spiritually intact and more balanced and more harmony in their life. And I do think there's going to be a section of the population that makes that decision. And it was interesting because I saw a New York City police officer who's 2 years away from retirement walked off the force today.
Yeah, I saw that too. I saw that too. 2 years from getting full pension, right? And he was just like, I'm out. That's it.
I don't care. I'm leaving. Your values do no longer match my own.
Right.
And, you know, I think there's this time period where, you know, even though the United States is a first world country and we have, you know, we're very rich in terms of resources and the things that we have and entitled, that's changing rapidly with all of this uncertainty that's going on. Some of those things are things that we took for granted before, but may no longer be there. And we're being, you know, on top of being forced into our homes and away from work life, I think this is an opportunity for people to, you know, pause for a second and say, how am I doing? And, you know, it's not that we should convince people that they're not okay, but I do think if given the proper space, and, you know, by space meaning, you know, a place where they're safe to talk about what's going on inside of them, good and bad, if they can have those conversations either with themselves or with people that they trust, I think that they're going to find that, you know, if they do some of this work, that the they're more empowered than they think they are.
Right.
And, you know, we're taught through our life that, you know, our boss, we should be scared when the boss walks in because he has control over our job. But in reality, the boss is just another human being who's dealing with the same things we're dealing with. He has trouble at home. His car wouldn't start, you know, and he had to take an Uber in. Like, he's just a human being too. And we're all the same. And when we can realize those things, and start to become a little bit more in balance with ourselves, meaning that we don't just think with the head and the ego, that we acknowledge and recognize our emotions, that we realize when something doesn't feel right, that we're out of balance. Either we're working too hard and we're ignoring home and our wife and our kids, or whatever that is. Like, one part of your life is taking the brunt of it, of the discomfort, that we start to try and find some balance somehow. And that empowers, you know, if we're able to do that in a safe way with others around us, we realize that we're way more powerful than we think. And we can vote day to day on where we work, who we work for, do their values match mine?
Right.
Is this a good place for me, or is this a bad place for me? Am I even in the right line of work? And certainly there's, you know, huge inequality in our world, in this country, especially right now. And those things are out of balance as well. And so, like, when you're talking about space, you know, spaces of kind of coming to grips and realizations, like, those are also windows of opportunity for us to provide safe places for those people, and also opportunities for those people. Because, you know, all of the underserved population, the people that are, you know, sort of feeling the weight of everything that's going on right now and suffering greatly, those are the people that will help bring about this positive change if we're able to provide them with enough safe space to sort of be able to stand up and have meaningful dialogue, not just anger, you know, which is understandable, but, you know, anger doesn't help and, you know, in a lot of ways in order to create sustainable change. But having that voice, a voice in dialogue where it's an open forum and people are open to it, that, you know, you can start to create some change. And those are people that are in those types of jobs where, like, they're essential. Like, that's the backbone of these companies that are making billions of dollars. They're the people that deliver our groceries, that, you know, help us get food to the table for our families, that, you know, make sure that when we turn the faucet on, that that the water comes out and doesn't run on the floor. Like, those people, we need all of them in order to live. And
you know what's so cool about this is, we need everybody to live.
That's what I love about, you know, this sort of, you know, when you give yourself time to sort of slow down and pause, and you realize, you know, some things about yourself, that, you know, you also realize that you're never alone, because everybody around you is experiencing the same things in their own way. And so everybody is a friend. Everybody is a brother or a sister. And you realize how much you rely on those people that sometimes society tells you that you should look down on.
Yeah.
And it just it creates this attitude of gratitude, which the positive psychologists and all these people who are, you know, promoting this movement, they say, you just got to change your attitude. To me, that's not enough, because it's not really authentic. I think you have, you know, but when your goal is to find your true self and to create harmony within you know, within yourself, that those things that were maybe blind spots before become right to the forefront. This idea that we're all together, we're all the same, we're all just trying to be happy, to find peace and happiness in this time that we're on this earth. We're all exactly the same. And the things that happen in the middle are because we're living a life that's not ours.
Right. Isn't that true? Gosh, you want to know what? It's so, isn't it interesting that when we become awakened, right, we become aware that there's tension. And then when we become awakened, sometimes the realization, and this is so common, what people will say is, I was doing something for somebody else and I wasn't doing for me. I wasn't living my life for myself. I was living my life for somebody else, whether it's a career or the way somebody dresses or maybe hobbies. There are so many layers that when they get unpeeled and that awakening happens, and again, we move from awareness to awakening, that people have that awakening of, wow, I was doing that all of these years and it was not for me. And now I'm going to start doing for me. And this isn't ego-based and it's not rooted in something that is selfish. There's a difference between selfishness and self-care. There's a difference between ego and also being true to who you are. And mindfulness, and it's not the practice of mindfulness. So practice means the meaning of practice in our sense at PTSD and beyond is saying we use it, we do it, right? And so it becomes just regular every day, right? It's not something that you got to think about or that, well, geez, Louise, I've got to schedule it. You know, we do it. And it is so, I can't stress it enough, how life-changing that this one way, right? This one way brings to people. And what's interesting too is sometimes I wonder, did we always have this? And yet somehow as a species, we got steered away. Yeah. Because if we think about our intuition, right? I did an informal study. This is super cool. So there was this guy in my doc classes, just, you know, senior vice president, right? Was always telling everybody why something wasn't going to work. No, no, no. And so I disagreed with him on something, which was leaders make decisions based on gut versus what the data shows, right? And you know, he told me I was crazy because, you know, of course, I didn't have the role that he did. And so I went to Barnes & Noble. Actually, it wasn't Barnes & Noble. It was Borders. Not Borders. Jeez, Louise, Mark. It was, I can't even think of the bookstore. What is it? Barnes & Noble. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Having a Debbie moment, people. I mean, it's always live and real, right? And I picked up the Fortune 500 magazine, and I called – cold call those organizations to ask a simple question, which was leaders and organizations, if you make a decision that goes against your gut, you know, versus what the data shows, right? The reports, you know, what decision do you make? And every person who answered said every time they go against their gut, they always make the wrong decision, regardless of what the data and the reports show. So there's something about intuition. So my question is, are we really finding ourselves again? Is maybe humanity finally finding itself again? We're re-finding ourselves again? We were just steered away on a path, or we were just steered away?
Yeah, I echo your thoughts. I think that's true. I mean, you know, it's one of those things that you can argue, I guess. But there's no doubt that when you pause and practice, it's transformative. And each person's experience is different, right? I mean, our past experiences are different. Our lives are different. We're all unique. So we experience it in different ways, but there are certain things that we have in common. And when you pause, like we're always, you know, I think about this, I guess maybe from a medical sense as well. Like at the end of a surgery, if you read a surgical report, they're looking for homeostasis, right? This returning to normal.
Yeah, right.
Returning to nature, right? Like, and that's what a surgeon's goal is at the end of a surgery. Like the sutures were, you know, skin was closed, suture was cleaned and bandaged, homeostasis was achieved. And I believe that's true for all of us individually, but also as a society that, you know, and for most people, it happens at the end of their life where they're trying to find some peace and harmony and sort of, you know, if they're given this opportunity to look back in their life, to see all the mistakes that they've made, and we all make them, to see, you know, the joys, the highs, the lows, and sort of find some peace and harmony with it at the end. And I think we're always striving for that. And I think that, you know, some of the things that are happening around us are this shift where we've gotten so far out of balance that, like, radical change must happen in order for us to even, you know, being within arm's reach of finding balance again. And that's where our comfort zone is, as people, when, you know, we have fun, but we're also productive and doing purposeful and meaningful work. There's a balance. We're happiest when the ego isn't driving the car all the time. Sometimes the soul drives the car, the heart drives the car.
Right.
And we're okay either way. Like, we're willing to share in that. And it's not okay that some of us can live in this perfect world where we have, you know, we're protected and others must suffer all the time. It's right. Out of balance.
Yeah.
And I feel like, yes, I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, there's this opportunity right now, even though it's scary, it's chaotic, it's uncertain, that we're all sort of just waiting for the end because we're like, okay, maybe in some weird way, this is going to bring us closer to being in harmony again. I hope so. I don't know that that's going to happen, but I think that's what's trying to happen.
Well, don't they say that things need to fall apart in order for them to be put back together again?
Well, you know, it's this weird thing about, you know, it just depends on your perspective in life, whether you think it's the universe, if it's a higher power or whatever it is. But like, one of the challenges that's thrown at us as beings, and I don't think it's unique to humans, I think it's all beings, that, you know, the requirement of suffering in order to learn the lessons we need to learn, in order to find our purpose in life, in order to find meaning and peace at the end, is this requirement that we not only suffer, but also grow through our suffering to, you know, gain those lessons and find our own version of peace. And, you know, that's why I think there's sometimes no other way. And, you know, that's not helpful when you're suffering. You know, sometimes that's not a very hopeful conversation. But when you can reframe your suffering a little bit in a safe place where you're like, okay, what am I not learning? What am I supposed to learn from this? I don't feel like we suffer for no reason. There's always a reason. And when you can reframe it as a learning opportunity, it becomes a little less painful and more hopeful when you feel like there's something good that's going to come out of it. Not necessarily in the short term, but, you know, in your life. And I also think that brings a sense of harmony within yourself, where when you quiet the ego, whether it's through mindfulness or through this transformative process, that when you quiet the ego enough and you heal, you begin to heal,
mm-hmm.
have this ability, whether in a physical, medical sense or from a spiritual sense, we all have the ability to heal from the inside out. And when you start experiencing that healing, the first thing that you want to do is give it to others. It becomes right. not about you and about everyone else, because you start feeling the pain of other people. And, you know, what's so powerful about, you know, the PTSD and beyond community and the work that you're doing is it's meeting people where they are and just be willing to sit there and be present with them. And at the, you know, the core level, that's what we want as human beings. That's what we need as human beings in order to, you know, to move beyond, you know, the simple needs that we all have of, you know, safety, food, shelter, those kind of, in order to move past that and live our lives, we need somebody that is willing to just meet us where we are, because sometimes we can't meet them any other place.
Right.
We can't walk to them. They need to come to us. And so, you know, in that sort of thinking and that sort of model, what happens is we all become healers. We all become teachers. You know, the students are the teachers and the healers are the people who have suffered. And the same is true for organizations. It becomes powerful when there's the masses start to move and become, you know, a group of people who know, understand, and can integrate this and take care of one another. Like, that becomes powerful in making change and some sort of radical change. And, you know, radical is like, we think about, you know, like radical violence. I think that of this in a positive way, like, you know, where we start to take care of our own families, our own communities, our own states, our own countries, you know, the world, it's a groundswell of movement where it's one person at a time, one, you know, crisis at a time. And it's not that hard. It's just, it's simple love, compassion, empathy, offering somebody the greatest gift you can give them by listening with your entire body, giving them your presence. Like it doesn't require that much. It just requires us to pause and offer it as a gift. Just say, you know what? I'm going to sit here and listen. I'm not going to say anything. You don't need me to say anything. You don't need me to tell you what to do. I hear you. I see you. And I feel your pain. And, you know, let's figure out a way to get through it. It's that simple, but you know, we need space. We, you know, we're all so crazy busy and we're all worried now about everything that's happening around us. We need the space to pause and go, okay, am I okay?
Right.
What do I need to do to take a step forward? And when you start taking those steps forward, you find yourself going, okay, I feel a little bit more balanced. It's never over. It's a lifetime process, but I feel a little bit more balanced and wow, how can I share this with other people? Because I see what's going on around them and I felt that and it's hard. You know, so, you know, even though it's certainly hard and it's not a quick way to do it, like, I do feel like there's an opportunity for the future to be a little bit more hopeful, a little bit more compassionate and inclusive when, you know, if we can get past the anger and the ego enough to go, okay, we need to start healing, and that starts with me.
I love that. We need to start healing, and that starts with me.
Yeah.
So how do we help people then? How do we help people say, and maybe come to that awareness that we need to start healing and it starts with me?
I honestly, I think it starts with, well, I hate to use this word because I don't believe in randomness, but random acts of kindness every day, and we can all do it. It's a, you know, I know we're behind masks now, and we need to, you know, give people space so that they feel safe.
Yeah.
But it's doing one good thing, you know, or multiple good things every day. For ourselves and for the people around us, because, you know, when you make somebody laugh, when you offer them a smile, you say good morning, how are you, and listen to the answer, that people, it one, it doesn't happen enough, so they're shocked, but when they think about it, they're like, you know what, it's not so bad. It I think that's where it starts, but, you know, we can all do more. But I really think that, you know, we have to start by, you know, making sure that we're as good as we can be. We're as healthy as we can be. We're in a place where our head and our hearts are open, and where our intention is to be kind, to, right, you know, to love others, to celebrate our connection and our humanness, rather than look for differences. This openness that allows our kind, compassionate hearts to come through, because we all have them. We just don't let them show enough. We all have them. And, you know, suffering brings that out sometimes. But we need to get to that point where, like, when you're open, you know, an authenticity to me is it's something that has been a continuing message through my life for whatever reason. But I believe that's I think it, at its core, it comes from the heart and people feel it. So, you know, I know that, you know, a lot of the work you do is, and the things that you believe are energy related. And I also believe that. I don't think we give the heart enough credit. I think you sense, you pick up on the frequency of people who are living, you know, more harmoniously, and that are approaching you as with this openness and kindness. And so those help to create safe spaces where you can say, you know what, this person is okay. This person will help me. This person will listen. This person is kind. Rather than, you know, what we normally do day to day, which is, you know, if somebody's different from us, we tend to, you know, move over on the sidewalk or fear that might attack us.
Yeah, right.
You know, but I think that's a heart-to-heart conversation that, you know, we only realize when we get out of our head and our ego. You know, ego takes a big hit, I know, but to me it's just about staying more in your body than in your head. And your head's important, you know, it makes, you know, executive decisions, but so does your heart. You know, like you said, with these business leaders, it's a gut reaction, right? It's a gut feel. Well, intuition is all heart-based. It's all right. Soil. And it's all based on things that you feel and energy, right? So we just don't give it enough credit. We all know things, and then we talk ourselves out with our head, right, and make bad decisions. And, you know, so I think it starts within just being a source of light, you know, which means to me living an integrative life, like, you know, doing enough work on yourself, practicing and walking the path of integrating your head and your heart and your soul to honor the values that you have inside. And when you do that, people pick up on that and people tend to gravitate towards you and find peace and calm and space where they can maybe share some of their suffering with you, or, you know, tell you things that maybe nobody else would listen to. And that just sharing that and being heard starts the healing process. And, you know, we're all, you know, this work that you're doing is like, I mean, there's not going to be any greater mental health crisis and post-traumatic stress crisis in the world than whenever this starts to quiet down, if it ever does.
Right.
We're all traumatized by it in our own way. And, you know, how do we begin to heal? We need to take this time right now and do all the things that you're doing, heal ourselves, be the best we can be right now. So when, you know, we're out amongst people or we're connecting virtually with people, that they feel our energy and know that they're safe, you know, begin to start the process of finding things that heal them. And when they're healthy enough, they'll pass it on automatically. I feel like there's this altruistic part of all of us. Like, we want to do good for others.
Mm-hmm.
And when you find that you feel this harmony, this peace inside of you, it's like you can't share it fast enough. So I don't think that's the issue. I think it sort of snowballs, but it's getting people to that point that's the difficult part.
Right. Right. Because right now, and I've said this before, is that right now there's so much trauma. I was watching something today on one of the news stations, and I commented, I said, okay, so there's re-traumatization one. Okay, now you just did it again, one more time. And after the third time, I thought to myself, why is this person re-traumatizing? And not only re-traumatizing, but every person that's listening is experiencing re-traumatization over and over again. So, which brings me to, and brings us to, the sharing part. I have to say that's so true. I mean, we know the research on this, right? So when you're not feeling well, what do? You volunteer. I mean, obviously there's self-care, but, you know, you volunteer, right? And it has all wonderful, you know, scientific, you know, effects within your body, right? And people feel compelled. You know, you and I were talking about the difference between a charlatan and someone who's the real deal. And I think that ways that we can tell the difference and be able to differentiate the ones who are charlatans versus the ones who are the authentic is based on, you can't help but share it. Now, I know the words are going to be the same, and maybe even the pauses and everything are the same. But if people just use their intuition and their gut and say, okay, is that person a charlatan, or are they the real deal? That, yeah, level of conviction. Yeah. I can't help but share it. because I've stopped my pain and suffering in some ways, and I want others to.
Yeah, I think there's I think that's a great point, and something I hadn't thought of when you brought it up is that this one, I think, you know, we need to be curious enough to bring out that side of things. Like, we need to just be, maybe it's an awareness, a curiosity to bring out this, you know, to see how people react, right, as they experience less suffering or become healthier or find joy. What do they do with it, right? You know, what's next? Do they begin to give it away? Do they begin to share it with others? Or do they keep it to themselves? And that also brought me to a thought of, you know, what I think, you know, and I think there's reasons, you know, good and bad, for each of us to have our own unique journey. And mine, you know, is part of some really great teams. And the teams that I was on that you know, were super successful and, you know, won World Series championships, the one common thread that they had is they were united in this idea of sharing.
Mm-hmm.
That they were so connected that when one person figured something out, it was given to the next one. When they figured out how to not struggle, they shared it with the whole group. Right? It was just like, it was this unselfish connection that brought people together, and this common idea of success being, we're going to do it together. And if I fail, you're going to pick me up. That, you know, I want to win, not to pad my own ego, but because I want to see you succeed. That's why I'm willing to sacrifice, not for me, but for you. And what's common in amongst, which I think all organizations, all successful businesses, and even in society, I think when we get to that point when the most important thing is for you, not just for your own happiness, yes, we'll always have a need to take care of ourselves, and we're accountable to take care of ourselves and our own lives and our own happiness. But when we reach that point when you don't even want anything for it, you just need to share it. And that becomes part of what drives you and part of your passion in life, is to, you know, take the light that you have and light the wick of the candle next to you and turn their light on so they don't have to struggle anymore. When that becomes the focus, then I think we're on to something, you know? And I hope that this latest, you know, massive suffering that we're all feeling will bring out the best in us. And, you know, I think we have to hold out that hope. And the people that do realize these things and have, you know, worked really hard in their lives to, you know, stand in their own pain and do this kind of work and want to share it, that they step to the forefront and have a voice and share. And we start taking some of the suffering away because it's just too much.
Yep. We start helping to take some of the suffering away. And you mentioned about, you know, doing the energy work. I did something with a person the other day, and it worked beautifully. It worked. So it was just incredible. And I know that, you know, that I've been working on this equation for years, and be, you know, helping with pain and suffering, yeah, replacement of pain and suffering. And it worked beautifully with this person. So I believe I'm closer to being able to do more of assisting that way. So folks who are listening, we've been talking with Mark Grusbeck, and he's been sharing his wisdom with us about so many different wonderful things, everything from mindfulness to mindful leadership to pain and suffering, and, you know, ways that we've gotten steered away in how we can redirect and become aware and awakened to move back on that path with intention and purpose and kindness and love, and to heal ourselves, as well as to have the conviction and compassion to share it with others. Mark, if there's something else that you'd like to add, what would be like the last one or three tidbits that you'd like to share with listeners today before we close? What would that be?
Well, first, I think I'm just grateful, you know, for our connection, you know, which has been really helpful for me. And, you know, I echo your introduction, and that, you know, for, you know, our relationship has been an example of this, where we just connected and, you know, we've just been so aligned in so many different ways. So I'm grateful for that. I'm actually grateful as well to be, you know, part of this, you know, PTSD and beyond community, because, you know, everybody's got, you know, their past experiences and their own suffering. And I just feel like whenever I'm around that, I just learn, and I learn, you know, from each person that, you know, is joining whatever activity that's going on or contributing, that I'm able to draw from their experiences and learn, which has been really powerful, and I'm grateful for that. And, you know, I just hope that, you know, through this process and through all this chaos, that, you know, this kind of community, this community in particular, can grow, because, you know, there's so many out there that haven't joined, that aren't ready yet, and you know, that need a connection to be able, you know, just have somebody to listen. And, you know, I think the overwhelming idea for me that makes the most sense right now is, and it's just my perspective, but I feel like this type of community has the power to do more healing than, you know, some of the other communities that are way more established. And you talked about, you know, energy work, intuitiveness, you know, the work of intuitives and empaths and light workers and energy workers and all of these things, which have been shunned in the past and by the medical community, by the, you know, by the masses, as, you know, sort of this foo-foo, not real stuff. And we're reaching a point where the people that healed in other ways need to be healed. You know, our doctors, our nurses, those people are pushed to the max. And what that's doing is opening up these other ideas, right? That these alternative therapies, as they're, you know, sometimes labeled as,
right,
like, they need to be healed from their own suffering. They're burnt out. They're, you know, experiencing trauma after trauma, and they can't heal themselves anymore. And so I think there's windows of opportunity to to expand on those things and show that, you know, yes, we need doctors, we need nurses, we need technology, we need analytics, we need all of it. But we also need to open our minds and our hearts to everything that can be offered in terms of removing, you know, the sufferings of all beings. And that means that, you know, we need to use the gifts of people around us. And we need to be able to, you know, be healthy enough ourselves to step back and not say, well, I've heard of it, but I don't believe in it. Say, tell me more about it.
Right.
Experience.
Right.
What can you do? Can you help me? You know, anything. We need to be more open because there's not enough healthcare workers, especially mental health workers, psychiatrists, psychologists. There's not enough in the world to even begin to make a dent in the mental health crisis that we're in. And we don't even know what it is yet because we're in the middle of everything else.
Right.
So I guess my feeling right now, and maybe the last message, is that what we used to feel like was that some of these other things could be a bridge. And the message now, at least from my perspective, is that the bridge is the way. Like, in some ways this may be, you know, I don't know, maybe have some roots in Buddhism or whatever, but it's also true in the medical community because you watch one, you do one, and then you teach one.
Right.
And so science shares that wisdom with, you know, Buddhism and maybe some enlightened people to say that, listen, we need to do it ourselves. We need to take care of each other. Well, how do we begin to take care of each other? We first need to recognize our own shared humanity, but it starts with kindness, empathy, compassion, and love. And we are the people that can either save us or, you know, we'll all go down together. But I think the message is it's so overwhelming that we can't ignore it anymore. We need to save one another. And it starts with the person in the mirror and the person next to you.
Yep, absolutely. We need to save one another. So powerful. Oh my gosh. Mark, you blow me away every time we talk. You really are. You're got so much wisdom. You're such a teacher. And I know that you'll say, oh, I'm just a student, but you're not. You're more than that. And I can't thank you enough for being on here. Folks, if you want to see more about what Mark writes about and to connect with him, you can follow him on his Twitter account, which is the @GATC, Mark, M-A-R-K, and go check out and see all the nice postings that he puts out there. And I say nice because there are things that will really spark your interest, things that will get you thinking, things that will make you say, and then other things that will say, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and try that. So you guys, this is Dr. Deb with PTSD and Beyond, and Mark, thank you so much again for being on here tonight. And again, folks, if you want to go ahead and connect with Mark, make sure you follow him on Twitter at the @GATCMARK. And everybody, we'll see you again next Friday on PTSD and Beyond. You guys make it a great weekend.